Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report podcast. I'm your host, Vago Maradian, and again, hope everybody had a great Memorial Day weekend. Our podcast is sponsored by Bell. Since 1935, Bell has been redefining flight. Learn more about its pioneering spirit at bellflight.com. The Biden administration last week submitted its first and much delayed and much anticipated 2022 defense budget request to Congress, asking for $715 billion to reshape U.S. forces to better deter China and Russia. At least that is their case. The measure prioritized research and development, as well as classified and nuclear modernization programs, improving pay and benefits, investing in infrastructure, and paring back acquisition efforts and retiring aging systems. Of that amount, Navy and Marine Corps spending came in at $211 billion, nearly $4 billion more than last year, but includes funding for only four new combatants, two Virginia-class nuclear attack submarines, one Flight III destroyer, and one Constellation-class frigate. 15 ships would be retired, including seven cruisers and four littoral combat ships. The retirements complicate the Navy's plans to increase its fleet to 355 ships. Columbia ballistic missile submarine, as well as Ford-class aircraft carriers, continue to be funded. Aircraft programs, however, were pared back, with the service stopping acquisition of F-18 Hornets, as well as P-8 patrol planes, while pressing ahead with the carrier and short takeoff and vertical landing variants of the F-35, acquiring more V-22 tilt rotors for the Marine Corps, and replacing the C-2 Greyhound with the CMV-22. The CH-53K also was supported in this budget. This program, which will constitute a deep dive into the Navy, will be followed by programs that take equally deep dives into the Air Force and the Army budgets. Joining us now to discuss the administration's request for the Navy Department is our very own contributing editor, Christopher P. Cavas, who wrote a great story about the Navy budget that showed up in USNI News, as well as Brian McGrath, a retired United States Navy commander, destroyer captain, and naval strategist who heads the Ferry Bridge Consultancy that advises not only corporate clients, but Brian also advises Navy leadership. Gentlemen, thanks very much for joining us.
Great to be here, Vago.
Good to be with you, Vago.
An absolute pleasure. Looking forward to seeing you guys in person, hopefully sooner rather than later, as we joked about as we were getting this underway. Before we get started, our global coverage is sponsored by Leonardo DRS. Northrop Grumman sponsors our weekly cyber report and our cyber coverage overall. Fincantieri Marinette Marine sponsors our naval coverage. General Atomics Aeronautical Systems sponsors our coverage of strategy. And General Motors Defense sponsors our technology coverage. Brian, let me start off with you, and then Chris, get your sense on this. What was your sense of this budget? What it's accomplishing, what it gets right, what it doesn't get right, and what you think Congress should redress?
The word that I saw used to describe this budget most, and I use the word myself also, was unserious. It is insufficient. It is unserious. It is, we have a national security apparatus in this country that is continuously talking about great power competition, and this budget does not rise to the challenge. I look at what our competitors are doing, and I look at what we're doing, and I find it to be deficient. The thing that gets me most is, if you look at the rate of inflation, it's just the top line, right? The rate of inflation in the year that ended in April of 2021 was 4.2%. That's not a figure I made up. That's the U.S. government putting that figure out. And if you inflate the 2021 budget 4.2%, that adds almost $9 billion to the Navy's top line. That's not what we have here. We're losing purchasing power. The Navy is going to get smaller, less powerful as a result of this budget. And I am bitterly disappointed, just bitterly disappointed. And I listen to people tell me that, well, the money's just not there. The money is there. I watch the other priorities of the President Biden's administration. And I see that they are willing to spend a great deal of money on many other things. So there is money. It's being prioritized elsewhere. And I think that is unfortunate.
The administration would probably respond to that by saying that the peace dividend or the Afghanistan dividend is staying at the Defense Department so that they can spend that money as they see fit. Chris, what's your sense on this? Do you share Brian's concerns?
Of course. I don't know anybody who doesn't. I mean, this is it's a budget that impresses absolutely no one. It impresses other than that they just simply aren't putting the effort into making a serious budget. And it's a flat budget. They'll say, oh, we're doing $4 billion. I mean, no, it's a flat budget. You're not growing the fleet. You're not growing the service. You're cutting people modestly. The fleet size grows not a whit. They admit flat out that 8 ships a year is not going to get to 355. And half of those ships are not fighting ships. They're calling them battle force ships. But, you know, 2 tugs, an oiler, and an ocean surveillance ship are not combatant ships. And it makes you wonder what is the strategy here. They have this budget and analyzing this budget and trying to figure out where they're going is made far more difficult because there's no future years defense plan, the FYDP, which gives you, you know, lays out the plan for the 5 years beyond the current year. So it's just a 1 year budget. You have no idea what they're planning on doing next year. When they responded to questions about, you know, you say you're, you know, the Afghan peace dividend, where's that going? Well, you know, that's all being plowed into the future, into the FYDP, and we can't talk about it. Well, that's awfully convenient. You know, I mean, seriously, that's a really lousy way to do business, and it doesn't instill any confidence. We don't know where that money's going. And we don't know what your plans are. This is an anemic budget, anemic effort. They're throwing things away without really explaining it. They're nickel and diming lots of things. Clearly, if you're a submarine, this budget is a party. You know, there's 2 attack submarines in there. There's more incremental funding for the Columbia submarine. And, you know, that's always the number one priority. And everything else is being sacrificed to that priority. I'm not so sure that's a good plan, a good strategy. And even they've talked about the importance of the infrastructure, the importance of the shipbuilding industry, and we want $25 billion to help the shipbuilding industry, including a lot of money for private shipbuilders. Well, if you want to build ships, industry will size itself to meet the demand. You don't have to give them money. But if you don't build ships, if you just build pretty anemic numbers of ships, they're not going to expand. Why would anybody expand? The business isn't there. It just doesn't back itself. This, for all the rhetoric that continuously pours out of the Defense Department of the Pentagon, the top leadership, this is not a budget that backs up that rhetoric.
The administration would say, right, that it needs some time in order to be able to craft sort of a broader strategic plan, right? I mean, this was, as every new administration is, tends to be a quick and dirty plan. The subsequent year is always when they put the full or deeper budget together. National security strategy, national defense strategies are both being updated and will be rolled out either later this year or early next, along with that deeper FYDP plan. And it looks like each of the military services have things to be unhappy about. At the end of the day, how much of this is the responsibility of the Navy? I mean, one of these littoral combat ships will be retired without ever having deployed. Hondo Gertz, who we respect very much and consider a friend and a distinguished public service, did get a little bit of criticism for his comment about LCS. At the end of the day, right? I mean, if your old piano is not good at being a piano, you repurpose it. In his case, he turned his old piano into a bar because Hondo is not only good at his job, but also very handy. I mean, at the end of the day, the Navy was the one not investing in the infrastructure of shipyards. The Navy was the one building shipbuilding plans that were seen as unrealistic. And the Navy was the one accused of having squandered resources when it did have resources. And now the resources are sort of tailing down. How much responsibility does the Navy bear in this ultimately, given where we are and folks asking serious questions about the entire portfolio and the strategy and the plan, which toward the end of the Trump administration became downright unrealistic in terms of what national spending would have been on a Navy, however much I want that to happen, right?
So when I was the XO of the USS Princeton back in the last century, my CO used to say, XO, you want it bad, you get it bad. So your comment on the speed or the depth of which the administration approached this fiscal year 22 budget, they wanted it bad and they got it bad. As for the Navy's complicity, I get it. I understand that the Navy, the Department of Defense, the Department of the Navy have not been good stewards of the American taxpayers' money. We have made errors. The question, though, that I keep coming to is, what are we going to do? Are we just going to keep denying them resources in a way that decrements our national security as a punishment? Are we going to punish the Navy to goodness? Are we going to put competent professionals into office? I would like to point out that we still don't have a nominee for Secretary of the Navy or any of the other appointed Senate-confirmed offices. Presumably, there are some people who can come in and help the Navy do better on these things. I agree, and I said it on this program, that I thought that the late Trump budget was unrealistic, unsustainable, unlikely to be passed, probably a political hand grenade to just throw at the next administration. But that does not mean there was not goodness in it. That does not mean that the general direction it was pointing the Navy was not positive and worth pursuing. I honestly think that the Biden administration came in and wanted to make some very significant statements up front, and they have made those statements. This is not the Trump administration anymore. The thumb on the scale for the Navy that we all believed existed during the Trump administration, all evidence to the contrary when it comes to how money got spent and how the Navy got funded, that thumb on the scale is gone. The Navy's just one of several armed services, and it's back to the Hunger Games way of funding the Department of Defense.
The one thing, though, I think the team with, I'm not sure if it's a return to the Hunger Games, although that's a terrific sort of zero-sum analogy, Brian. I mean, I think part of the challenge, right, is if you're going to do leap ahead, if you look at your current force and you say that it might not be optimized for what we have to do, right, there is, I think, a 12-point-something percent increase in research and development, right? I mean, so you could say that there is a transition happening.
And there's an 8.7% decrement in procurement and a 2.2% increase in operations and maintenance. So if you've got a 4.2% rate of inflation and O&M increases by 2.2%, that's a cut. If you've got a 4.2% rate of inflation and you spend 1.3% more on infrastructure, that's a cut. That's the way inflation eats it.
Right, but what I'm saying is one of the challenges has been, let's spend more money on maintenance of the ships we have reducing the number of ships, increasing the overall maintenance level. Right. I'm not advocating for these plans. I'm just saying that I think that that's how they were looking at these trade-offs.
A good bit of that money comes out of the O&M account, though, and the O&M account is not keeping up with inflation. So if you're saying that's a priority, they didn't fund their priority.
Kavis, from your standpoint, what's the Navy's role in this? And help us transition to the next point, right? Who helps the Navy get out of this? Is it Congress? Is it a new Navy secretary with some schlitz with the White House? Who helps here? The community making the case for sea power, although I have to say the community has been working pretty hard to make that case for sea power on this program. Jerry Hendricks and his work, Brian, your work, Chris, your writings.
I think the number one, if you're not going to get any much more money, then why are you so focused on procurement? You're not getting the ships that you want. If the new throwaway word is legacy. Ooh, it's a legacy thing. It's a terrible icky. We have to get rid of legacy. Who are they talking to? Legacy is a way of life. You want legacy programs. Your task, Admiral, Mr. Secretary, is to keep the systems you have effective while procuring even better systems for the future. And when they wear out, they wear out. But you don't just say, oh, it's old, or we didn't buy that, or that's not our current program, or we don't want anymore, and throw it away. Well, why would I buy you any of these things if you don't want to use them? And things, of course, change. Attitudes change, strategies change, tactics change, technology changes. The issue is if you have some lemons or they're starting to turn bad, make some freaking lemonade out of it. It's just there's nothing in here. There's nowhere in here is there any talk about improving what we have. Here's a modernization program. Here's an update program. Here's a rework program. The history of warfare and of platforms in warfare is replete with services who did not have the investments they wanted. Nobody ever gets what they want. So that's a non-starter right there. It's a straw man. So how do you make what you have work? And there's nothing in here about that. If you don't like the LCS is a great example. The primary attribute of LCS that has been for 20 years, it exists. You're building it. All right. What can you do with it? Make it into something you want. If that means you have to spend money on them, you can spend, $150 million and upgrade this ship in a year, and you'll have something that you want a whole lot sooner than yet another new program that takes 5 years to get going and another 7, 8, 9 years beyond that to introduce operationally. Who cares? The frigate's not going to show up in any meaningful numbers until the middle of the 2030s. So what? The LCSs are still in production. They're still building them. They're still coming. What's your plan to make these effective? I was listening last week to Vice Admiral Bill Mers, who's the commander of Seventh Fleet and the Japan-based Seventh Fleet, who talked about they're making the systems work. They want these systems out there. The people that operate the ships come up with better ways to operate them. They find the flaws faster. They fix these things. And there's actually a big push on LCS right now. He's got two out there now. He'll have four before the end of the year. He's going to have eight LCSs in the Western Pacific next year. Well, okay. For all the people who say, well, we don't like it, it's a legacy program, we have to get rid of this because we want to reinvest that. Well, dude, this is happening now. The CNO talks about we have to reinvest this stuff for something that's not going to be here until the mid-2030s. So what? You can't say this is a pacing threat and we have to move with agility and alacrity and sense of urgency. And then throw away the stuff that you have, but it's not exactly what you want, and plan for other stuff. It's not going to be here for another decade. That doesn't match up at all. They have no credibility, zero. And this legacy term, now, oh, it's a legacy program. Really? You know, and so do you want everything brand new? That's what happened in World War II. There are these immense shipbuilding construction programs. And then the Navy faces block obsolescence 20 years later. So, for example, you had all these destroyers in the 60s, or late 50s, early 60s. And they were getting new destroyers, but not at nearly at the rate that they wanted. They had 200 World War II destroyers. What do you do with them? They came up with a Fleet Rehabilitation and Modernization Program, FRAM.
Right.
And, you know, you rebuilt the ships, reconditioned the ships, had all new sensors on the ships, put new anti-submarine weapons that were two, three generations past what the World War II stuff was. They weren't exactly what you wanted. You wouldn't have bought that brand new, but they were relatively effective in certain roles and limited roles for another 15, 20 years. And instead of just throwing them away and having in their place, nothing. So there's nothing in here about that. And that sort of, that kind of thing has to come from the top down. You have to have leadership and direction that says, you know, the new stuff is all well and good, and we always need new stuff, but you can't just throw away stuff because it's, you didn't order it. It's what you got. It's legacy. Ooh, it's icky. We don't want to deal with it. And how do you manage anything that way?
Well, I hear you on the World War II analogy, although I think that that's sort of a one-off, and we all remember the
SLEP program, service life extension programs, the tank class submarines with their crappy engines that right, they realized were going to work. Guppy subs, yeah.
Let me quickly in around the 7 or 8 minutes we've got left, Brian, what does Congress, right? I mean, if you have no other redress and you feel that the administration doesn't get it, even if they feel that they get it, right? Congress always has a say in it. On our business podcast, the sense from our team was that some of these things are going to be so unpalatable that the Navy will end up getting free money, and each of the military services will get free money to get whatever it is that they want, as well as, right? I mean, so the administration will get its budget and then it'll get a plus up so that it can buy F-18s and everything else, whether or not they're legitimate or relevant for future conflict or not, right? I mean, it's on the services wish list and they may end up getting it. From your standpoint, Brian, what is the kind of redress that Congress, right? What's Congress's role and what would you have them do to fix this? And Chris, want to get your take as well.
Well, I think I'm glad you, I tend to talk about the Navy by ship count, and that's an unsatisfying way, but it's better than all others. I'm encouraged by the fact that you keep talking about aircraft procurement, because we took a serious hit. The Navy took a serious hit in aircraft procurement in this budget. And that's very serious. So I have to believe that there will be a considerable amount of pressure to plus up both APN, Aircraft Procurement Navy, and Shipbuilding and Conversion Navy, SCN.
But Brian, that was actually planned. I mean, that's the F-18 program again coming to the end of its planned buy. So that was,
and folks have been saying that's not the right airplane for the Navy to do what the Navy wants. I mean, right, the Navy has been pretty adamant it doesn't like the F-35, and that, you know, it is what it is. But at the end of the day, right, so what are some of the changes you want to see Congress specifically make?
I would like to see Congress specifically add a DDG into the mix.
Little
I would like to see. What's that, Chris?
I think there's little doubt that's going to happen.
And I think that's probably something OSD took into consideration when it put its budget in, was that it thought, well, Congress is just going to add this back in anyway. There are things in this budget that I'm very excited about. I'm very excited about investments in networking, in Project Overmatch, in integrated combat system, in the things that are going to connect up the platforms and the sensors in the naval architecture of the future. I would like to see I would like to see more ships. I'm satisfied with the procurement profile of the FFGX because I would like to see that ship move along slowly and have its learning curve objectively evaluated before we bring in another shipyard and compete that hull. I think if we move too fast to competition and to ramping up production, we run considerable risks. So I would like to see, obviously more DDGs. I'd like to see more airplanes. And if it means continuing to build airplanes that the Navy wanted to stop building, I'm okay with that because we need numbers. We need numbers. We need ISR aircraft. I'm not convinced the Navy is as dedicated to the MQ-4 as it should be. I think that airplane, the long range, high altitude ISR, land based ISR aircraft the Navy uses. I'd like to see more ISR. I've written about this need for ISR. We need probably at least two more ships into this budget. 10 ships a year, 30-year average lifespans is a 300-ship Navy, which is what this budget is supposed to be able to support, a 300-ship Navy. 8 ships a year, 30-year lifespans is a 240-ship Navy. That's the math. And I don't want to have a 240-ship Navy.
Yeah, he's right about the destroyer program is actually, there's a multi-year procurement contract construct at the moment that expires in 2022. There are three more hulls, DDGs 137, 38, 39, to order under that MYP before the end of FY22. There's only one of those ships in this budget. They were, and so they're actually incurring a $33 million penalty, the Navy is, by not meeting the terms of that contract and ordering it. The question is, what follows that MYP and how many ships will be in it? There'll be another MYP probably, but that decision has to do with retirements and when is the large service combatant, now DDGX, going to show up? We don't know any of that because there is no FYDP. It's very confused. They seem to be nowhere publicly. They've not made much progress at all in terms of deciding what the DDGX is going to be, what it's going to look like. They're way past due on that. But Congress could easily say, you are already in contract violation under this MYP. What are you going to do about it? It's costing you money. You're actually throwing away money right now on that without even asking for these ships. So Congress will, I'm sure that they'll add another destroyer in for Bath. Where's 139? You're supposed to order that this year too. That's actually two more ships. That would be 10. That would work out. Congress would be happy. Where's the money? That would be $4 billion they have to find. Where is that $4 billion? Well, I don't know, but that is an issue, sure.
I'm not sure though that it's compelling to say that we, even if it's stuff that we may not need, it's stuff that we should buy just to buy it. I mean, at the end of the day, at some point you have to change the vector, well, right? I mean, we had Sir George.
What are you referring to? What is we're buying just to buy? Tell me what that is.
F-18s.
We're not right? buying.
F-18s are out being used around the world every single day today.
And the Navy also has twice as many airplanes for the job than any military service does. It is buying them because the F-18 is the Navy's happy place, right?
But I mean, Boeing has a pretty good lobby.
Boeing has a terrific lobby, but I'm not necessarily sure that the lobby should determine it. The Navy is making the value of the aircraft carrier really problematic by not investing in any of the long range unmanned air power or anything else to make it relevant, right? So I understand from a force.
I'm tired of the discussions becoming reaching zero sum. But you're putting you are, and that's not just you, but you are pitting the size and the capacity of the Navy against future capability. And I think the nature of the threat, the seriousness of the threat, and the geostrategic situation requires that we do both, and that we fund current readiness, and that we build infrastructure. We need a significant defense buildup, and that's not what I'm seeing. But again, I didn't expect it, right? I did not expect that. I did not, however, expect this disappointing a budget.
And it's the first shot. I guess what I'm saying is that at some point, when you've just been doing the same thing, even in the face of a threat that was rising that should have prompted you for more than a decade to be doing things differently. And I do think that a decade ago, the light went off that we need to do things differently, that the at some point you're going to have to take risk to make that transition. And it, and you've got to make, would I like more money? I would like a lot more money. I think I would be buying more tanker aircraft. I'd be making a whole bunch of transitions in this budget. I do think part of the criticism here at the end of the day is that there's this sense that the Navy mismanaged the resources that it had, and having mismanaged those resources over a long period of time, that, you know, maybe a little bit of a reticence to give the Navy more money in order to sort of sort its problems out. Very quickly before we part from both of you, is there support in Congress for the United States Navy in particular? And do you think that those members are going to make their voice heard and increase the amount of spending on the Navy? Brian, and then Chris, really quickly before we part.
Yes and yes.
Yes and yes.
All right, then. We're ending this on a positive note. Brian, thanks very much. Chris, thank you very much. Always a pleasure having you guys on. A very important debate, and one that we want to continue having with you guys in our effort to hold people's feet to the fire appropriately. Thanks so much again for joining us, and looking forward to having you guys both back on. Thanks again.
Thanks, Vago.
Thank you.
And now a word from our sponsor, retired United States Army Major General Jeff Schlosser, who is the Executive Vice President for Strategic Pursuits at Bell.
We've been building creative and innovative aircraft, next generation types of capabilities for almost 9 decades. Bell is the company that can deliver that.
Thanks very much, sir. And thanks to all of you for listening. Please follow our daily podcasts and visit the Defense and Aerospace Report website to subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook at Defense and Aerospace Report, and check us out on LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. Thanks again to Bell for their generous sponsorship, and we'll see you again tomorrow.